Hey, this is Malcolm Brogdon, and this is the Sideline Guys Podcast.
Hi, Pacers fans. Welcome into another Sideline Guys Wednesday. As always, alongside Jeremiah Johnson, I'm Pat Boylan, something we never thought we would say. It's kind of an upside-down world with COVID. The NBA draft is a week away, and we're in the middle of November. So we bring on now Vice President of Player Personnel, Ryan Carr. Ryan, you've joined us throughout the years in many different segments, and I think fans really enjoy getting to hear your perspective and your insight. Before we delve into anything, this is obviously unique times for you, for your family, for your team. How are you doing? Are you holding up, staying healthy, staying well?
Yeah, doing great. I mean, for me, you know, usually I'm gone 20 days a month or so. So to be parked at home for 9 months has been a blessing in a lot of ways. I've gotten to do stuff with my kid. Yeah, not a lot of super fun stuff, but some stuff with the kids and just do some things that I normally miss. I think actually my wife and I have managed to figure out how we can coexist on a regular basis again and have enjoyed it. And already obviously for whatever normalcy we can to get back to. But yeah, I mean, I've figured out actually one little thing is I've always wanted to be a pilot. So I started taking private pilot lessons and working towards getting my license. Maybe I could fly myself to some games here in a year or two. But yeah, just trying to be productive and try to figure the best way to use kind of this time we've had.
Well, now that you've asked, I'm not letting you off the hook. What has it been like getting pilot lessons? And I will say you have an opportunity to one up another Pacers coworker because our own Mark Boyle tried to take pilot lessons last summer, and I don't think he ever ended up graduating. So
I did
right off the bat at one upping him.
Oh, I did not know that. But if I can get anything up on Mark Boyle, then I will be extremely excited. It's fun. Like, I think I'm at like about 15 hours. Everything is done by hours. So about like 15 hours, I'm getting, I'm an inconsistent lander, still, but I'm getting closer. And, this Saturday was my most recent one. I probably won't have another lesson for several weeks now, but, yeah, it was really, really pretty, pretty encouraged and excited. I love it. It's a challenge. Gives me something to really, you know, I've always kind of been a nerd, so it's something more to study. And, you know, the amount you have to learn about the weather and just everything and systems and processes is just kind of up my alley. So I'm doing pretty good. I'm hopeful in the next few lessons I'll get to solo for the first time, and that'll be a huge, huge, huge accomplishment for me. So yeah, I love it. I'm addicted to it. I love it. So my wife isn't quite as excited about me trying to do this, but it's something I've wanted to do since I was a kid. So pretty fun.
Well, we'll be interested in following your path, and maybe as things wind down and hopefully months down the road, we'll catch back up and see how those flight lessons are going. I want to add too, the way I phrased it made it sound like Mark failed the classes. I think he just decided not to end up pursuing it. So I do want to at least give him that. But
unless maybe it was just too hard and he just quit. Well, I'll be sure to ask about that. That's for sure.
I'm just glad he made it back down and safe, and you know, fail is relative as it relates to that. So,
well, absolutely. Like, if he's alive, then he didn't fail. Because somebody, when I started to take the lessons, my instructor, it's probably like a flying cliche, but they said takeoffs are optional, but landings are mandatory. So you have to kind of get over the fear of pointing that nose down at the ground and coming down and doing it. But yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. Maybe there's a future segment of we could load up a plane with a camera and fly to a game and do like a little segment on that or something. It'd be pretty fun.
You know, JJ's mind's always turning in regards to different segments they can do for the broadcast. So I'm sure he's already like 10 steps ahead of you. And I'll give him the microphone here in just a second. But I wanted to ask you about COVID and its effect on your job, everybody's job, this draft coming up. I mean, there's just so many areas that this seemingly touches, from international travel to having players in on hand. We haven't seen college basketball in months. I mean, can you try to encapsulate all of it? And I'm sure what's been a lot of adjusting and learning on the fly, not just for you and your team, but all NBA teams, and where you feel like you are now about a week away from the draft versus maybe a typical draft.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've been working on this draft for over a year. I mean, which is, you know, it just should have been done in June. And it's, you know, we're still working on it. And, you know, I think you have to accept that there's some things that we're just not going to have as much info on that we normally do. I will say I've always been a major proponent as part of the process is face-to-face interviews. In previous years, when maybe the only way we could talk to a player was through like a video conferencing, I was always a little hesitant, just feeling like there's a, you know, just be easier for a player to be coached through that or just not really get authenticity. I think I've learned this year as we've done, I think we've interviewed like over 100 kids, between us and the Mad Ants and just covering bases through this time. And this is kind of how this generation communicates anyways. And I see my 15-year-old kids walking around the house, you know, on FaceTime with their friends. And it's just natural for this is how they communicate. So I think it took more getting used to on our side than it did on you know, the draftee side. But been really, you know, really felt like we've had good success with these interviews and getting a feel for who the kids are and what they're about. So I've been really encouraged by that. You know, it's we've had a lot of time to study film, probably too much in some cases. You know, and on our side, it's been uncertain. But I think a huge point is it's been just as uncertain, if not more so, for the kids, because they're not, I mean, we've done this year in and year out, so we're used to it. This is the one time they go through the draft, and they've, for months and months, really, you know, the agents and all of us just haven't known what it was going to look like. So just guiding them through it, and every time we interview somebody and you ask the kids, you know, do you have any questions, you know, they're just almost unanimously asking, you know, what about the process? Do you hear anything? You know, do you know when the draft is going to be? So they've been, you know, they're just, you know, stuck at home just like all of us and trying to figure out what they're going to do and the best way to do it. So it's definitely been different in both challenging ways and some things that I think we can use in the future to be more efficient. Just like things, internally, like having all the guys jump on a meeting from around the world, like we would schedule meetings and talk and do things, but now Zoom and Microsoft Teams and these different platforms have become such a way of life. I think everybody's used to, you know, hey, let's all jump on a call together and, you know, maybe probably save the company some money and sometimes when we can do it like that and be able to, you know, still be connected even if we're not, you know, in the same spot meeting. So definitely been a challenge, kind of like I was talking about personally, I think professionally trying to find the ways that we can take what we're going through and move it into the future and help it, have it help us. And, you know, but at the same time, looking forward to wrapping the 2020 draft up. The interesting part really is overseas has already started playing and been playing. So we've got 2021 going on at the same time as 2020, which actually is interesting because some of those 2020 draft kids internationally were playing in the 2021 season. So it's almost like a, you know, a fast forward of getting to see them play a little bit and get a little bit of extra evaluation on him online. So, you know, just like all of us, just trying to do the best we can and you know, draw the best conclusions we can going into next Wednesday.
You've said so many interesting things, Ryan, and I could go a number of different directions. I remember being at Fox 59, and every year you would come in and do the pre-draft interview for Fox 59 Sports Sunday, and every year was kind of similar. You know, we would ask you some of the questions, and you would say, you know, not the same thing, but there was a general theme, and everything's different this year. I mean, nothing probably for you feels like it has in any of the other years, because you haven't had the workouts, because you're doing it over Zoom, because, you know, everything is different. So do you go into this with the same level of confidence as you normally would?
I go into it with the same level of confidence in terms of how I feel we are prepared versus what the other teams are. I always like our chances. I mean, I kind of feel like that's my job, is to make sure that, you know, we are more prepared than, you know, other teams, or at least try to be, because you don't really know exactly what they're doing. But yeah, certainly there's a certain rhythm, you know, in normal years to what we do and when we're at the combine and workouts, and just even in terms of meetings and deadlines and how we build ourselves up to being prepared. And that's certainly that rhythm certainly is not a part of this process. But I think in a way it's good too, because like I was saying, you end up having to figure things out a little bit. I always like a good challenge. There've been challenges. And I feel like, you know, we've found ways to overcome as many as we can.
I know the draft is always something that you're focused in on, and the front office, and I think the coaching staff may offer assistance and input maybe on draft night, but it's not what they're spending their time focusing on. Is it different though this year in that, you know, a couple of months ago there was a change with the staff, and now you have a new head coach and potentially a new style, a little bit of a different mindset in terms of maybe the kind of players that he might be interested in? So did you have to not start over, but, you know, reshuffle your board at all with the new regime on board?
Yeah, I don't think it's a situation where we would reshuffle the board. As we rank our board, it's primarily on primarily ranking on, okay, in terms of a whole career, who do we feel like could have the best career, and then the second best, third best. I do think it gets down to it's going to be really important to hear from Nate, and we're starting to get a feel for that, on what kind of players he likes to coach, what is he looking for, what's going to fit best in his system, what kind of personalities, you know, is he comfortable coaching, just a number of different things that go into it. And then, you know, it may not change the draft board essentially, but it may change the recommendations. So, you know, when you get down to, you know, let's say we have the 54th pick, and let's say we feel good that 33 of those guys will certainly be gone. Projecting the 54th pick is a little bit harder than, you know, the 13th or something like that. But, you know, here's our group of guys. You know, within this group, we feel like these guys are the most talented and have the best chance of making it. And within that smaller group, you know, maybe what players in that talent pool, you know, are the kind of players that he's looking for and can be best utilized for him. So, you know, it changes a little bit, maybe the final part of the process. In terms of just ranking the players, I think that I don't think it would change it up, but the type of player that we may feel could succeed could change. And as we get to know Nate better, certainly we'll, you know, try to get him the players that can succeed the best.
Ryan, I know it's not your job necessarily to think this way, but it's been something that's been on the top of my head as it relates to this draft class here for months. Do you think there's the potential that when we look back at this class in 5 and 10 years, that there are more surprises because there's been less accessibility and less information, that maybe if you're picking further back, there might be players available that are more valuable? Does that make any sense?
No, I think it's going to be incredibly unpredictable. Anybody looking at a mock draft right now, I think you could probably tear that thing up and throw it out. And I have some good friends that run those sites. But I would say that this is going to be incredibly unpredictable. I think you'll have teams trying to get into the draft to get specific players. I think we'll have less information in terms of where a player may get picked going into it. Even to right now, you may read about the top three or four or five guys, and you know, depending on the day, you know, is who gets picked first. We can't even, you know, it doesn't seem like there's even a consensus on that. So it'll definitely be unpredictable. I think because of that, you know, you're gonna see probably pretty random hits and misses. And I think that helps us the further down the draft we are. Hopefully have somebody get overlooked. And there's always a chain reaction. We're always, like when we're in the draft room on draft night, we're always looking for the first unexpected thing. The first player that gets picked on the, you know, in the draft that is unexpected, because usually that sets off a chain reaction of just, you know, teams all of a sudden deviating from what, you know, you thought they were going to do going into it. I think that could happen from pick one this year. So it'll definitely be interesting from a, you know, being involved in it. It's going to be a lot of fun for me. And I think our staff, just to see how this one all turns out. Because, yeah, I think there's a great chance that, you know, the sixth pick could end up better than the second, and the 23rd better than the 15th, and just all throughout. Like, you know, we were talking about it today in a meeting. It just wouldn't surprise me if, you know, a second-round pick ended up, you know, one day being the 10th or 12th best player in this draft, if not higher. Like, it just – there's definitely that potential this year.
And it's obviously a very unique draft because of the restrictions that COVID have given everyone, but also for the Pacers too. At least you don't have a first round draft pick right now. But one thing I'm wondering too is, you never know, right? Like any team, including yours, Kevin Pritchard, the front office could make a deal on draft night that changes your outlook and where you're drafting. How much of your preparation or your team's preparation is being ready for potential moves that could happen, even if you don't, you know, necessarily know them ahead of time? That landscape can change so quickly.
Yeah, no question. I think that's why we always talk about being prepared 1 through 60, and really a little bit more than that. You know, in terms of undrafted free agents after the draft. But you know, it's something we always have to be prepared for. This one is a little bit more challenging on that. On that side of it, because, you know, usually you can, let's say we have the 20th pick, a little bit easier to sell agents to get info about moving up some. But, it, you know, we work through it. There's some hurdles in terms of getting information, but we get every piece that we can. And then this year, you know, you feel like you have, in a normal year, you feel like you have more facts. I think you have a little bit more educated guesses, you know, maybe more than facts this year. So we're trying to turn those educated guesses into facts over this next week or so, and alleviate as much risk as we can if something like that happened.
I'm not sure that I've ever asked you this, but I've often wondered about the Woj bombs. Do you remember the first time that Woj kind of hijacked the draft and started announcing picks 2 and 3 ahead of time? And when he puts a tweet out there, he does it a little differently now that his partner, his employer, is the one actually broadcasting the draft. But do you rely on a guy like that or his tweets to just help you keep an eye on who might be picked, or are you pretty much aware before that happens?
No, we're waiting. We're on a conference call with the league. Woj is probably about 90% quicker than the actual league, which is amazing in its in and of itself. I only remember maybe once when what he tweeted didn't end up being right. So usually if he tweets that they're strongly leaning towards somebody, it seems to work out that way.
Exactly. I wanted to touch on what you mentioned earlier about the European players. So there are guys that have been planning to be in the 2020 draft, and it just has continued to drag on and on. And now those seasons have started. So now they've started playing professionally, but then they'll come back over when they're drafted. Is that how that's going to work?
Well, it'll just depend. There'll still be a buyout with their teams, and assuming this is very unique, another very unique thing. So I don't want to speak with a total certainty. Assuming you pay the buyout, you would be able to bring them over. Although we've never had to try to pay buyouts for a drafted player during their season, so it's a little bit different. I guess I could see a team not wanting their player bought out in the middle of their season. So you'd have to work through that. Just another unique circumstance. When you think about it, yesterday was actually the pullout date for all players, but it really, really is the international players. So you've had international players able to wait until 10 days before the draft, whenever it was going to be, to pull out. So we had a few of those guys pull out yesterday. None of the guys that I would expect to be drafted in the first round, but just another, interesting part of this process.
As it relates to your selection, assuming it stays where it is, how do you feel like this draft is in terms of depth as a whole? Are you expecting there to be many guys there that you're interested in, and how does that maybe compare to other years?
Yeah, I think, I think that this draft, if I had to had a crystal ball, probably lacks like some superstar power, but I do think there's a lot of players that are going to be good NBA players, starters, rotation guys. I think like we talked about, just going to be really unpredictable. So, I would be elated if at pick 54, there was somebody that's still on the board that maybe we have ranked in the 20s. I think there's a possibility of it, but not great probability, but there's a possibility. I think as we start getting into our board and the, players in the 30s, I think we could have one or two of those guys. So I don't know. I'm almost like cautiously optimistic that there's going to be just, more craziness in these picks and have a chance at a couple guys that we thought would be picked 20 picks higher, be able to be there, which is, all you could ask for picking that low is just to get a guy that you think has a real shot at making it.
On draft night, I know that draft room is a who's who of knowledge and information and everybody that's going to make decisions that are going to affect the franchise for years. Can you give us just a generic idea of what it's like to be in there? How tense is it? How much pressure is there? How much, are you involved in a generic process in an average draft on a normal pick?
Yeah. That's a lot of average generics. it's a lot of fun. Like I always think that my job is to make sure that we're all prepared enough, that all the information is organized and available quickly. So when the phone does ring and there's a proposed trade, that we have gone through the scenarios with the draft guys, that we know who it is that we like. And we know who it is that, we would go trade up, if we did get a chance to move up, who are the guys in that range that we would do it for? Just limit as much as I can be responsible, any chaos or uncertainty. So we go into that night with a plan of, these are the guys we like. We also have a cutoff point where, you know, if everybody is gone that of the guys we like that you sell, you trade, you stash, you have all those options available to you. And you know, it's fun. You know, it can definitely take a while depending on your pick and you're just playing it out. I would say, you know, starting four or five picks before yours, you know, you start to really focus in and start having discussions on what ifs, and figuring out what it looks like your pick could be. At the same time, as picks come to you, Kevin may have us on the phones making calls to offer trades and, you know, see if we can move up. It kind of works both ways. As we get calls, we're also having calls go out. And then just I always, you know, it was Donnie, Larry. I've been fortunate enough to be here a long time. And now Kevin and Chad, like you know, they need a clear mind because they have to make some big decisions very quickly where there's not necessarily time to gather around the table and talk things out. So, you know, anything I can do to make that easier, you know, that's kind of how I view my role and certainly input on players and, you know, what I think too. I get to kind of have two voices. I have the voice of our scouting group, which I always want to make sure is totally represented. And then, you know, and then maybe if my view is a little bit different, but really we try to make sure that every possible scenario is vetted and worked out. So we have the answer right there.
On a much smaller scale, I can relate to what you guys do on draft night when I have my fantasy football draft. Yeah. And if there's a player that I'm hoping falls to me and then I'm really anxious in the two or three picks prior, I wonder if you could recall times where you're sitting there with a pick, you know you can't necessarily move up to get the guy that you really want, and you were just on pins and needles saying, I hope he falls, and then he did fall to you. Is there one that stands out to you where you were really anxious? Because after the draft, we always hear, you know, we couldn't believe he fell to us. We were so happy.
Yeah.
I don't begrudge anyone for saying that because you want the player that you've selected to, you know, feel good and that's your guy. But has there been one that maybe above others fell to you or just you were able to get and you were really nervous maybe a pick prior would not have been available?
Yeah, I don't want to seem like I'm sugarcoating it, but I mean, I feel – we're always excited about the guy we picked. And to be honest with you, you know, we don't pick anybody that we think should get picked after us. So,
right.
You know, like specifically Danny Granger way back was one. I think we picked him 17 or 18 and we were pretty sure that he was going to go in like the top eight. Mm-hmm. So as he came down, he was one for sure. Paul George was very close. A couple of players that fell the right way for us to get. Miles was like that. Even more recently, like Aaron Holiday, his agent thought that he would be gone probably six or seven picks before us. So as he was there, we were really excited. And then Gogo, you know, last year, honestly, we had graded as a lottery talent. So to be able to get him, you know, where we did six or, you know, I guess three, four picks later, however many picks was, you know, we thought was a great opportunity. So there are definitely other instances of players that you just in your gut really, really like. And, you know, you get disappointed when they go off the board because you really hope that they would be there. But that's just part of the draft. I mean, you know, you teams get to pick in that order, and it's part of what makes it fun and what differentiates it from recruiting like the colleges do. There's no sales job in the draft. You're evaluating and making choices, and you know, sometimes it goes your way, sometimes it doesn't. Just depends on what the other teams want to do.
Another question that just feeds my curiosity with the time and the era that we are currently in. You mentioned your communication with the agents. How difficult has this been on them? Because, you know, if people are not aware, usually if an agent signs a player, he will provide for them until they're actually making money themselves. And that's gone on about 5 months longer than it should have. So these guys are probably living on at least the top of the draft guys. Are they just living on the agent's money right now? And then they'll have to get paid back at some point.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure what all those agreements are individually, but you're right. In a normal year, they will usually, whatever agency it is, will bring their guys together, train them together, you know, whether it's Chicago, New York, LA, you know, Las Vegas, and it's a much shorter time. You know, this year, this has been going on and on and on. A lot of kids have just been at home. You know, we would dial up, you know, and talk to somebody from their parents' living room. And it's actually, you know, I've kind of liked it. I feel like maybe a little bit more comfort and, you know, and all that. So definitely different. There are some groups that there's some guys together working out in Las Vegas right now. But it's just very hard with the different COVID restrictions in different places, especially I think when you talk about New York and California, where so many of these agencies are based, they just can't get their groups together. So definitely been different. I think, you know, we got the kids that went through the combine testing. We got those measurements and results. It was interesting to see like weight and body fat and different things. Overall, pretty pleasantly surprised. Kids are doing things to stay in shape and at least by numbers, you know, take care of themselves. But yeah, they definitely haven't had all the normal, definitely had the normal process that other drafts have.
Some people may not realize that your job is a lot more than just the draft. And I want to ask you about a specific scenario, and you can peel back the curtain as much as you'd like to. A few years ago, offseason Pacers are making a pretty landmark trade. Paul George, of course, is on his way out, and I'm sure there were many offers that the front office was looking at, and one of those, of course, was the one the Pacers chose with Victor Oladipo and Domantas Sabonis. And at that time, you know, Domantas really playing out of position in Oklahoma City. How much did they look toward you and your team as they were making that decision for information, especially on Sabonis? And how much did your preparation for that draft, even though you didn't select him, you feel like helped you and the Pacers make that call?
Well, I think it, hopefully, I guess it doesn't matter what I say, it doesn't matter what Kevin says, but I would hope it helped a lot. Like Vance Catlin is really a huge help to me in terms of kind of managing schedules and overseeing the kind of the pro scouting process. So we work, you know, hand in hand on all that. He does a great job, but you know, I mean, Domas and Victor were both really talented players, different years in our draft. I think Kevin would tell you that I was a really big Domantas Sabonis fan. If we could get up and get him somehow, we didn't have the opportunity, so it didn't matter. But it's why you do your work, because you may never know when it comes back around. And when, you know, when they're trying to decide what, you know, maybe what trade to make, you know, the fact that they would remember that or listen to me at that point or whatever, you know, means a lot. Domas was a guy unanimously liked by our scouting staff, not just myself either. So, you know, they do a great job of, you know, we're always heard. You know, we're never, Kevin and Chad are, phenomenal, Kelly, about listening to, you know, our strengths and weaknesses, who we like, don't like, probably getting annoyed by hearing who we like and don't like. I always, my bosses over the years, like you get paid, you know, they tell you that you're paid to tell them what you think. And, you know, I can think of numerous times, probably, whether it was, you know, Larry or Kevin, whoever it was, or Chad, where, you know, it was just a player, maybe they probably liked more than I did, and they just get tired of me, you know, telling them, you know, why I don't think that they'd be a good pick or good for our team, and vice versa, somebody they don't like, and I keep saying, you know, and our staff keeps saying why we think we should get them, and, you know, their patience for us, you know, they probably go home, and you're like, man, I'm so tired of this. Like, why does he keep saying that? So kudos to them for continuing to listen to us and value, you know, the different things. Cause, you know, Domas was a, you know, and Victor, for sure. That trade obviously ended up catapulting us into the next generation of this team. And, you know, although the playoff success hasn't quite got there yet, even through injuries and all that, boy, I mean, those two guys, we've won a lot of games over the last few years with them. So we got to get better. We know it. But man, what an amazing, ride it's been since getting them.
And I think to me, that's the most fascinating part of your job, in my opinion, because you just never know when a work that seems like it may never come into play all of a sudden is part of one of the biggest decisions that a franchise has to make. And it's so interesting. You just never know if the guy who's picked seventh this year, maybe down the road, you just don't know. And I think that if you ever needed an example of how that could play out, the Domantas Sabonis example seems to be, you know, like the best example that you could find of that.
Other, like you talk about trades, you know, people say, like, it's funny if we trade the pick, it's almost like people apologize, like, oh, sorry. You know, like, no, you don't get it. Like, I'm in there. Like if Malcolm Brogdon is better than our, you know, what ended up being the 24th pick, we need to do that. Like I work on those guys too. Like I'm all good. Whatever makes a team. Paying the pick for Thad Young. Like those are all like those are that's part of the job too. Is saying, hey, like these guys are more valuable than that pick. Like they're better than this pick will ever be. Like we need to do that. So, that's kind of another part of it that we have to always do is make sure you kind of have a feel for, you know, what that pick could be. And, you know, Kevin's trying to, and Chad and Kelly, they're all, you know, we're all worried about, well, what, not only what, you know, the draft is all about like 4 to 5 years from now, honestly. They're just, if you get somebody that can help you in their, you know, first, second year, you know, that's amazing. But where we've typically picked, it's hard to do that. We feel like we've beaten the odds on a couple of those picks where people have. But honestly, like if you're not picking in the top 10 picks, you know, you're probably not counting on those players for that year. And usually those picks are going to teams where they have huge opportunity. They're not coming to play behind, you know, Domas, Victor, Malcolm, TJ. You know, guys who, you know, are so good in teams that, you know, have won as many games. So it's just a lot of nuance. There's a lot of art to it that you learn about every year. Like, even though the rhythm I talked about is usually the same, you know, each player is different. Each team is different. And there's always a big puzzle in trying to help put it together. And, you know, I don't know, like to be able to help be a part of putting these teams together is, you know, a pretty amazing deal for me.
you have to pinch yourself with your job. Pat and I, we do the same thing. I will congratulate you on winning 2020 with your activities that you've been able to accomplish, proving you can coexist with your wife when you're not traveling and also flying the plane. But you're usually not as busy with your job, I don't think, most Thanksgivings. This year, in November.
Well, the last couple Novembers, I've this is interesting. So here's a little insight into my job. Like in terms of, I try to be a good boss to my guys. And so, you know, there's all the college tournaments during Thanksgiving week normally. And so I don't know how many years I've been doing the schedule, let's say 10 years. And I've always given the ones in Hawaii and the Bahamas and all those nice places to our other guys. I want to, you know, make sure they, you know, you're in the gym a lot, but when you're walking back to the hotel, it's always nice to be able to see the beach or whatever. And so the last 2 years, though, I made an executive decision that I was going to go to the Maui Classic. So the last 2 years, my Thanksgiving has been in Maui, which doesn't totally suck other than my family wasn't there with me. But this year, I know we will be busy because I would foresee we're still putting the finishing touches on our opening day roster that at that time. But hopefully I can get back home to the dinner table and have Thanksgiving with my family. So that'll be a good thing for 2022.
But that's just my final thought, is just the next 4 weeks, let's just say, how crazy is this going to be with all the things that have to fall into place? And we're not, you know, breaking any news or announcing a start date yet. It's been reported, and I know they're still working on some final details. But, you know, all the things that have to happen before the middle of December, it's almost unfathomable to me.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be lists and making sure that no detail goes unchecked and undone. You know, we're a little bit used to it personnel wise in terms of the draft and then moving into free agency very quickly. However, it's not usually backed up by going to camp so quickly. So like you said, we don't know exact dates or anything like that, but it does feel like that timing will be a little bit sped up. And, you know, after 9 months of a little bit more of a, you know, a slower pace, I'm ready to, I think we all are ready to get the wheels moving and work on, you know, having this team put together and get the season started. So I think from everybody up here in the third floor of St. V Center, you're going to have a lot of excitement and, you know, a lot of energy ready to go.
Well, Ryan, those that subscribe to our podcast tend to be some of our most diehard fans, so I know they're really interested in hearing what you have to say. And thank you so much for all the time you've given us, the insight you've given us, and best of luck here as a week plus is away until draft night. And make sure the next time you see Mark Boyle, you give him a well-deserved ribbon.
I definitely will. I can't wait to see him. You know that he took a first solo. If you ever made it to solo, the tradition is they cut like the back of your shirt off. So I'm going to ask him about that. And then more importantly, I'm going to see if when I do get my license, if he'll be willing to fly with me, because people say it's cool, but the ultimate act of trust would be if somebody gets in a plane with you. So we'll see. But I appreciate it. You know, this is kind of the one time of the year where I kind of come out of the cave and get a chance to talk to y'all. And I love doing it and having these conversations. I love talking about what we do. And I just appreciate you having me on.
All right, Ryan. Thank you. Stay safe. Stay well. Thing. Jeremiah?
I think we can make it a more regular thing if you'd like, Ryan. I mean, I could see some weekly analysis from you if you'd like.
I mean, you talked to Benner. Benner's the gatekeeper.
All right, Ryan, thank you. Stay safe, stay well, same to your family, your team, and everybody else.
You guys too. Thanks a lot, guys.